Hi, and welcome to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. My name is Emily Thomas, and I am a mom on a mission to get a new perspective. Y'all, I am not proud of it, but I've spent far too long waiting for my daily irritations to resolve before the good times can begin. And I'm thinking the struggles are just going to keep coming, so I might as well get a new plan. God promises if we persevere through our daily struggles, our character will be built and we'll end up with a hope that doesn't disappoint. And I don't know about you, but my hardest days happen when I've lost sight of that hope. So if that's your story too, join me each week as I interview someone who has passed from just struggling to struggling well. Welcome back, guys. Episode 12 here, and I'm chatting with my friend, Kristen Kill. I first encountered Kristen about a year ago as we worked together to plan a talk that we were giving at a conference. We became fast friends since she's one of the sweetest girls around. Kristen is a writer who is learning to cultivate deep roots in a city that feels worlds away from her home. She sees her daily life as a piece of art and aims to create something lovely for her family and her guests. I don't know about you, but creating lovely art in my life is not always something that I can even begin to think about. It's not on my radar. There's a lot of reasons I like Kristen, and one of the main ones is how different we are. I have a lot to learn from her. I have friends like her in my neighborhood, and everything is so exciting, and they're finding beauty in the way the light's hitting the banana. Like, it doesn't even matter what it is, they're gonna figure out how it's awesome. And I really enjoy that, and I really need that in my life, because that's really not where I'm at in my head a lot of times. I know I'm a better person for being around them and having the opportunity to do things like with my neighbors catching fireflies and making flower head wreaths. In 3 million years, I promise I would never have done those things if it wasn't for my very sweet, very in the moment, very different than me friends. And so today I wanted to share with you another one of these very different than me friends. You're gonna learn a lot from her. I know that I have. So let's go ahead and get started. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you.
I know, you too. I totally forgot that it was Columbus Day today.
Yeah, I was out on my boat, but I decided I had to row on in and have this conversation.
That is hilarious. You're totally cooler than me right from the get-go. I had to come in from my boat to be able to talk to you today.
Just say it's a big deal to me.
Was it just like a canoe?
No, it's like a full on sailboat. I've got a sailor shirt on, like with a lot of billowing, big white billowing.
Oh, no,
it's Columbus Day. You guys don't do that. This is how we do it in Texas.
Yeah, my husband doesn't even have the day off work. Stock markets are open.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have a boat. Just in case there was any, you weren't quite sure.
You don't really have a boat?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, you were just kidding.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I hate that about myself. Nobody ever knows what's actually happening.
Well, remember, like, I live in New York. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if people that just seem totally normal are like, oh, yeah, we just weekend on our yacht. It was just lovely. And they're totally serious.
Oh, heavens. No, I don't have a boat and I don't celebrate Columbus Day by
boating,
wearing a sailor hat.
You're
or shirt.
So much funnier than I forget how funny you are.
I'm so sorry. I will try to be very clear. You know, Eric had a teammate when we lived in China, and the girl didn't know understand sarcasm, and every time anybody joked, they would have to raise their hand, and she would
know then that they were joking.
Yes, and so I would say I'd raise my hand, but that won't help.
That's hilarious.
Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Emily. I'm good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to get to talk with you.
I know. I am too. I just realized I didn't turn my phone off. Whoops.
I didn't either. That's exactly what I just did.
Everyone, please put your cell phones on silent. Thank you. Okay, so your family. Tell us about them.
All right. I have 4 kids and a husband. I have one of those. He's wonderful. We've been married for 15 and a half years.
Oh my goodness. You don't even look old enough to have been married that long.
You just keep saying that to me. Yeah. It's crazy. So we got married when I was really young. I was only 20.
Okay.
He was 21. So we've really grown up together. It's been a season. And then, let's see, we have 4 kids. Our oldest is in 10th grade. She is 14. And her name is Hallie. And then I have a 6th grader named Maya, another little girl. I have a 9-year-old boy in 4th grade named Jones. Mm-hmm. And I have a 7-year-old daughter named Lael, who is in 2nd grade. So,
cute names.
They're fun, right? So we have, like this really crazy mashup right now where, you know, like I still have little people who like are waking up early. Well, really just the youngest, like wants us to help her make breakfast. And then I have people who are up until 11 o'clock and like want to share their hearts, like only once the sun goes down. And so it's a really funny stage. Like I feel like I'm always living in all these different worlds just inside my house. It's pretty funny.
Okay. So you live in a small rural town. Where do you live?
Yeah. Small place called New York City.
Oh my goodness. Right.
So we're on the Upper West Side of New York and have been here 5 years. And yeah, we live in this, maybe that's why I feel so squished and spread so thin. Cause we live in this little 2-bedroom apartment,
yes,
which sounds crazy. And it actually is a little bit, but it feels normal now.
Yeah.
And so all my kids are in like a bunk room. Okay. And
do you have like older kids with young, like how do you split it up?
Everybody's in.
Oh, they're all in one room.
Oh yeah. It's just a 2-bedroom apartment. So
I'm realizing that now. Yes. I'm doing the math.
Although I do know people who are so savvy and smart and do like a Murphy bed in the living room or something if they want to make it work. So I know we're crazy. We need to just like bust out and go to a 3-bedroom. It's just, you know, we want to pay for college. So we've got a 2-bedroom. So the kids are like in a big bunk room.
Okay.
And then we have a bedroom and then like a fun living space, kitchen, dining room, bathrooms, that kind of stuff. But
you said it's 1,000 square feet, right?
I think it is. I think it might be more than that if you include like the showers and the closets. I don't know how they work that out, but it's about 1,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do your kids think about living in? I mean, this is probably all they've known. You've been there 5 years. So some people remember.
5 years. Yeah.
Where'd you come from before?
So we're from Washington State.
Yeah.
Out in the Pacific Northwest, and we're from a really small town. Well, like 2 small towns right next to each other. My small town's a little bit bigger than my husband's, but it's really interesting because all of our family is there. All the grandparents that are still alive, you know, all our aunts and uncles and cousins and our siblings and our parents are all within 10 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
So we still go back and spend our summers there. And that's wonderful just to, you know, get out of the city and give our kids a sense of home and a little different kind of stability than they have in the city. Mm-hmm. And then they get that really sweet, like not just a week visit with family, but they're there enough to really get to know everyone and be a part of life.
Yeah.
So that's pretty great. And yeah, we came here 5 years ago. So our oldest loves it, like can't imagine living anywhere else.
Okay.
And next down, didn't used to love it. Now she loves it. I think because friends are such a big deal in middle school.
Okay.
And the younger two are a teeny bit indifferent. Like they love it in both places, you know, but it's sort of sweet. Like we get to be bi-coastal and they get to have lots of friends everywhere and are having a good time in both places. They're really different, but they're both home.
Okay. You mentioned that you're working to make life work in a context that isn't your normal.
Yeah.
Do you feel like after 5 years living on Manhattan is more normal?
No.
Does it seem normal?
It sometimes does. It seems normal when we're here. And then I think as women and moms and maybe just humans, we have this idea, I think, of our default of like our settings, you know what I mean? That come from our childhood, our cultural background.
Uh-huh.
And Manhattan's pretty cross-cultural for us, like to live in an apartment and have a doorman and elevators and have to shop differently or walk everywhere instead of using a car or all of those types of things.
How do you have to shop differently?
Okay, so it actually might be easier. Like today, I just use this app called Instacart, and it goes to a grocery store here, and I just pick what I want, and then it comes to my door.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't feel bad for you.
Totally easier, right.
That's cool. Wow. And you have a doorman? You don't even have to open your own doors?
No. Isn't that amazing? I mean, we open the door to our apartment, but yeah, it's like a security thing. It is funny. What we've noticed is like, there's just certain things about getting around or, you know, education is really different here. Yeah. Like schools are, private school is really expensive. Public schools are awesome, but they're a lot harder to get into, like middle school and high school.
Public schools?
So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just like a whole different culture and sort of system to everything.
Okay.
So it's just a different kind of rhythm in life. It's taken us a bit of time to adjust. I think we really are adjusted, but Josh and I feel like sometimes what we tend to think is normal, especially I would say as our kids grow into like a new season, like now we have this high schooler, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're homeschooling, which is great. She goes to this school online that we adore, okay, and it's wonderful. But it's so funny because homecoming is not a part of her life right now, and she's a sophomore. Okay. And she was just saying, gosh, Mom, I'm watching on Instagram, you know, the last 3 weekends, everyone's in doing homecoming.
Okay.
And we're like, oh, right. Like, we're so sorry that that's not part of your experience.
So what do you do?
Even as a homeschooler.
Yeah.
So it's just a funny thing. Like, that's one little teeny thing, and more because we homeschool than anything else. But there's little things that come up like that, that we realize, wow, that really, like, that thing that was really normal for us that we kind of always envisioned for our kids, it's really not going to ever be a part of their life here. And that's kind of funny. So mm-hmm. we hit that a lot.
Okay.
And we realize more and more things that we used to think are normal just are not normal for our kids. One of the things that was funny this summer, we realized, even though it's not normal for us, like, things are just so different for our children. Like, when we got back to Washington this summer, our kids would not go upstairs alone because they were so afraid of being in a big house.
Really?
Even our 14-year-old, she watches and babysits tons of kids all the time. And she would not stay with my kids after dark at my parents' house. They have this whole room, their living room is like, right. Well, it's like a wall of windows, their whole living room.
Oh, okay.
And she was like, anybody can just walk up to a house here.
Oh,
like, this is so unsafe. Like, there's no security. There's no, like,
it's so funny. And she lives in New York City.
Right. Wow. Right. So my kids are total weenies about the country. They're toddlers again for the first couple of weeks when we get there. Cause the things, I mean, I freak out in the Target parking lot cause there are no parking lots here. You know, they just have valet parking when we rent a car. And
really?
That's it.
You valet your car to go to Target?
Well, I don't have
a car. You don't
have
a car. This is so crazy.
No. So this is what I mean.
Every time we talk about normal things, I'm like, wait, hold it. It's so crazy. Yes.
So funny. So my son, who's in fourth grade, right? He's 9 and a half.
Uh-huh.
Within the first week that we were back in Washington, we're playing hide and seek on my parents' property.
Uh-huh.
And we find him hiding underneath our car that is parked on an incline, like right under the engine. And he's like, this is the best spot. He has no idea that it's dangerous at all. Like, this is what I mean. Like, they're like babies. When we go back, we have to retrain them in all the things that they used to know. It's pretty funny. Yeah. So they are definitely all New Yorkers, even if they don't want to admit it. They definitely trend that way.
Okay.
It's pretty funny.
All right. So you mentioned that one of the things you kind of are wrestling with is giving them the experiences that are important to them. Is that kind of what you mean by the homecoming thing? Is there anything else you feel like they're missing out on?
Well, you know, I think no matter what we do with our kid, they're always going to be missing out on something,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah,
if you choose to homeschool, you're choosing all these wonderful things that you're saying yes to, but just by the very decision to say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Yeah.
So you pick your challenges. Like,
yeah,
our 14-year-old has been going around in the city for 2 years by herself and can take public transportation and has all the independence that a suburban driver, you know, 16-year-old mm-hmm. have. So she has traded this incredible amount of independence for some more like suburban country experiences that she doesn't have right now, like in our puzzle, you know, the way that we do life. So there's certain things that I think sometimes, especially in a small apartment, in a space like this, we're like, do they need a house? Like, do we need a place where they all have their own room? Or are our kids really going to be in bunk beds until they go to college? Things like that, that we wonder if we're crazy. And I'm sure some people think we are crazy.
Well, isn't that kind of normal in New York? Or how do families do it?
Totally. Oh, of course. Yeah, it's totally normal. But it's so different than how we were raised or what we knew. And so being able to go, okay, this feels odd in our minds sometimes when we really go, wait a minute, do we want to go back to everything that we had or that we thought we would have for our kids?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we want to say, what do we want more than all those things that we're giving up and missing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, in the end, as I'm intentionally building and cultivating a life for our family, mm-hmm. in the end, I want to get to heaven and be able to embrace God and have him say, well done. And I want to know that I've been obedient to the call of our family. And for now, this is it. And I'm so clearly believe that it's bringing forth great fruit in their lives and it's part of our family story. So sometimes I find myself wanting those things, especially when I'm weak or not rested or, you know, just having a really crummy day and I wish we had like a homeschool room or I wish I could just sign my kids all up for school and send them, which maybe I could do that. But there are those days where I know, like when I'm rested, when I'm really abiding, when I'm able to clearly continue continue to discern that this is what God has for us, I know in my heart, this is what we want more than all those things that we're giving up. Yeah. You know, we're choosing a different set of challenges.
Yes. I already know the story, but I want you to share with the listeners your heart for New York. I mean, you end up in this place, like you said, it's completely different than where you're from. And
yeah,
I mean, I think if I had to move to New York, can't even say it.
New York.
Call it.
Yeah.
New York. I would have some, you know, fears just because it is so different and you've embraced it. And I'm sure that hasn't been easy, like every step of the way, like you just mentioned. But tell me how God has given you a heart for the city.
Gosh. Well, I think, you know, we were missionaries before we were married. I was missionary overseas in Hawaii and in Asia, and just always thought that is what I would do forever. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of left and never thought I would come back to America. Okay. And then I did, because I met this really cute boy and I was in love with him, and we decided to get married. And then after our oldest was born, we went back overseas to Europe, and we were missionaries there. And we came back to the States unexpectedly because I was pregnant. We had a toddler. There was this really yucky outbreak called the SARS outbreak. I don't know if anybody remembers.
Oh, yeah.
That. Oh, yeah, because you're a nurse, of course.
Yeah.
So it was like this yucky respiratory virus thing that was going all over Asia and, you know, knocking people out. And our leaders and we felt it was best to return to the States until it was resolved. And it was like a really unexpected kind of flattening feeling for us to come back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And not because we didn't love the U.S., but because we never thought we would be back. You know,
it wasn't your picture.
Right. Yeah. And so we came back, and my husband worked for, he's a marine biologist at the time. Okay. Now he doesn't
crazy
work in marine biology.
He's
a director at a software company, but his degree's in marine biology. And so he worked in that field for like 4 years. And during that time, God just really gave him a clear picture that he like had not ended our missionary story. Like our life for living incarnationally in a kind of postmodern culture and a place that needed healing and needed the gospel had not ended. And we really felt like it was time for us just to be faithful and build into our family and our wherever we found ourselves and where God had provided for us. But Josh had really specifically heard God call him to the corporate world, which we thought, well, you're a marine biologist. Yeah, right. Like, that's sort of funny. And and through a series of events, we ended up having this opportunity after 6 years to come to New York City, and his job is here. And we moved here really seeing it as a lot of the fruition and the realization of this dream of living in a place that needed the gospel and living missionally in an urban area, which we just have always had a heart for. And so we kind of landed here just so thrilled to have a job that allowed us to be in a place that was dark and that needed Jesus. And so I think that not only are our affections tied here because of our heart for missions, but our affections have been just continue to be tied here by all of the life-giving things that we experience here and the way that we see God in just the diversity of all the nations that are represented here, all the ethnicities that we see on the street, and that we're all of our friends that are from so many different parts of the world, and all of the culture and architecture, and there's just so many life-giving things that jive with who we are, even in not having a car and walking everywhere. Like, some of the things that are hard are also some of the things that are our greatest gift. And I love that those are normal for my kids, even if they aren't for me. Sometimes I just want to go to a Target, and then I'm like, really? I want to go to a Target? Like, is that really where I'm living right now? Sometimes I do just rent a car and go to a Target. But
so there's no Targets in where you are?
There's some outside of the city. Okay. I think there's some like in Queens and Brooklyn. And
I see.
And there's one in Harlem that's close enough for us to like take a car up to or take a bus to. Okay. But yeah, it's not like, you know, an easy thing to get to.
Well, when I lived in China, and I would sometimes take an overnight train just to get to Starbucks because
Starbucks. So
yeah. I mean, the floor was the same. The chairs were the same. The music was the same. Yes. Like, I just felt like, I know this place.
I have a friend who lives in Saudi right now, and she does that. She like can't wait till she can get to Bahrain to the Starbucks.
Isn't it fun? I mean, and it's so dumb, but also it's like a little vacation.
Right. And I mean, I'm not living internationally, but there certainly are those little those little things that I think we have to reframe our expectations about, you know, to be able to realize that it would be very easy to exchange what God has given us for, you know, I love that verse that says we could, they exchanged the glory of God for the things of man. Mm. And I feel like all of these things that we encounter on a daily basis and that are a part of our new normal now are things that God has given us that are life-giving and that allow us to walk by faith. I sometimes, just like everyone, want to exchange the things that God has given me for the things that I understand, for the things of man. Yeah. And I have to remember that walking by faith is really just the most brilliant adventure, and that those things really do feed my soul. I don't know what I would do if I couldn't go and stare at a gallery on a rainy day anymore. Like, there's just those things about life here that are so, so sweet.
Yeah. Well, and don't you live across the street from Central Park and you get to go to that beautiful, what's that place called? Belvedere? What?
Oh, yeah. I'm not right across from there, but I can walk there.
But you said it's beautiful.
Belvedere Castle, yeah. Oh, yeah. I told you about that, didn't I? I forgot that we
looked it up.
When we were roommates and talked so much, like, into the night when we were so caffeinated at Declare. Yes. Absolutely. So, oh my goodness, I probably just talked to you to death. Anyway.
It was so fun. I loved it. And let me just tell you, for the listeners, I would just pick a famous person and be like, do you know them? And she would say, yes, I do.
Every famous person, not even knowing them, but just seeing them. You just see people.
I'm reading right now Tina Fey's book, and I was laughing so hard when I think about your husband. He just walked up to her. And thought she was your friend.
No, her daughter plays baseball in the same league as our son.
I'm dying.
And
I can't even,
my husband is so funny because, I mean, we don't know her. Like, I would love to know her. So, but, you know, Tina, if you're listening.
I know. We'll just tell her you were on my podcast and she'll be like calling you right away.
Yeah. Meet me at Hippo. Yeah. So she is really sweet and seems super normal, but my husband, you know, knows all these people's faces, like women that I would know from church or, you know, wherever. And you know how guys are, and my husband is really introverted, like really introverted. Okay. And so he always feels like this pressure to make sure he says hi to people that he knows when we're out somewhere, or like if I'm not with him, like he would hate that idea that he walked by one of my friends and didn't say hello and it was rude. And he's trying to like make that work with his introversion. And so, anyway, Tina Fey and her daughter were at the same, like, I think it was like pitcher assessment last spring or something with our son at a school gym. And Josh like was making a beeline right for her to say hello.
Like, don't want to be a jerk and not say hi to
her. She must be one of Christy's friends. Okay. And then like right as he got to her, he was like, divert, it's too bad. Had to turn and look away.
Oh my gosh.
So funny. No, but we don't know famous people. We just see them.
But you see them. I saw Seinfeld at the sporting goods store. Like, I can't believe it. That's funny. Crazy.
Yeah. So, that's sort of funny. Really, come to New York and just don't stay in the tourist spots. Go to the neighborhoods. And, I mean, you know, that's such a weird culture to, like, see famous
people. It is.
They're just really normal. Yeah, but... no, that was pretty funny. I felt really bad for him. He was like, I almost totally embarrassed myself today. I'm sure she would have thought it was hilarious, but it was pretty funny. But yeah, Belvedere Castle, to get back to that idea of Belvedere Castle, I love Belvedere Castle because it is this, like, it's a part of the Central Park Conservancy. Okay. So it's this castle that you think someone would only build a castle if they want to live in it for themselves, right?
Right.
And it looks over Turtle Pond, and it's right by Shakespeare in the Park. And you can, like, Google it and see pictures of it. It's just stunning.
It is.
And I remember thinking, oh, maybe we'll get a tour of the castle when we first moved here, and going in, you know, like when we were in Europe, you can go and you can tour the castles and they're like museums. And and I walked in and it's just all cement inside, like beautiful stone, and has all these conservancy like signs and information about the park and about, you know, how to take care of the park and all these things. Mm-hmm. And it was built, I learned the story, just my jaw dropped when the park ranger told me it was built by this family as a way to be able to do just this, to be a part of the conservancy and to be something that could be built that was beautiful to give generations of people in New York access to a view of the city and a view of the park. And that just blows my mind. There's so many things like that that are just there for the benefit of the people, like for the common good, that you can see when you're walking through the park or, you know, at Rockefeller Center, if anyone's ever seen all of the like art that's sort of like this gold plated artwork. Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, just the pouring out of this level of artistry that was done and paid for to benefit generations of people, I feel like is such a beautiful picture of legacy. You live in a place and your work does something to touch all these other spheres of industry, and faith overlaps into the way that art looks to people beyond your years, the way that, you know, finance works, or the way that writing works, or whatever it is that you might be doing, to be able to see those spheres where culture intersects with our faith and benefits generations of people, and to realize that wherever you live right now, whether it's in Dallas or a small town in the Midwest or New York City or Seattle, whatever it might be, where you are, what you're doing today can bless generations because of the way that you intentionally build into your life and the way that you manage your resources for all the people around you. And so I just am blown away by that. Maybe also being from the West, where everything is kind of like a strip mall, you know, nobody takes a lot of great care anymore in a lot of the Western states. I mean, I don't want to just judge all the Western states, but there's a lot less architecture and a lot less history. It's a different kind of history and culture. Yeah. And so for me to think that there's a place that I can go and stand that was a part of a vision that someone else had so far before my time to be able to bless me is just such a beautiful picture of what I want my life to look like here or anywhere.
Yeah, that is a great perspective to take into your everyday life.
Like, doesn't that just blow your mind? Yeah. Like, I kind of, every time I go there, I get really teary because it's such a an intentional gift that I am so humbled by.
I read on your website, it says that you're wrestling to find beauty in the mundane. It kind of makes me think of what we're talking about, that you've discovered that you have an opportunity to make something lovely for those who dwell in your house and the people that you welcome in. You said that making a home has become your art.
It has. So one of my favorite books of all time is, of course, The Hidden Art by Edith Schaefer. And sometimes now it's called The Hidden Art of Homemaking.
Okay.
I just adore Edith and Francis Schaeffer. He was a really big theologian in the turn of the last century, or I guess like post-World War II.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's getting to be like close to, you know, 75 years ago. But they lived in this little cabin in like a chalet in Switzerland and had a community there called Le Brie that really deeply influenced my parents and then turned me. And they just had it be this place of hospitality and learning and education and ministry and mission that affected anyone who came in. And really the covering over all of that was the shelter is what Le Brie actually means. And having extending hospitality. And she wrote this book all about basically the art of what it looks like to create a home. Okay. And when I was first a new mom, I was a very young mom. I was only 21 and I was overwhelmed and consumed by the task before me. And I felt kind of thrust into it. Mm-hmm. And so being able to look at it from an artist's eye and to see the way that I could cultivate beauty and hospitality for my family and also for anyone else that we brought into our home was a really huge nugget of truth for me to realize that there was such a spiritual significance in that.
Yeah. So what do you do?
Well, I mean, even just in anything, I love, it's sort of really, I think, a state of your heart first, and then it comes out in different ways for everyone I know. Like, not everybody is a decorator, but someone might be a wonderful cook, or it may not even look as practical as some of those things that we traditionally think are like Martha Stewart-esque or something, you know, that are domestic, but it could just be the way that our own personalities that God has given us, you know, express the creativity that He's poured into our lives and our hearts in the way that that comes out to our family. So I don't think it looks the same for everyone, but for me, it looks like making intentional choices that have a heart of hospitality as it comes out in my personality. So cooking is something I'm really awful at, but okay. I like to do. I have lots of time. Okay. But even in a day that is hard and we're having pizza, we can light candles or, you know, turn on soft music or make it a feast and make it fun and special. Or we'll have different traditions that, you know, we always have like a Saturday night family movie night, or we have certain things that we love to serve when football is on, or certain things that we do at different times of the year. Yeah. But I think just it's a state of your heart of realizing that you're creating a space in your home and in your life and in your conversation that offers hospitality. And even Sally Clarkson and I were just talking about this on our own podcast recently about...
Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, was it just about the way that you cultivate your heart? Like, what are you pouring into your own heart in life? Like, how do you fill up your own soul? Mm-hmm. Because when you consider, like, what it looks like often to invite people into your home, typically, if you're having a party, you take care to think about what people are going to eat or what people are going to experience or where they're going to sit. And I think that sometimes, as moms especially, we neglect the idea that our hearts are what we're inviting our children into. Like, we're inviting them into our heart and expressing our heart to them in all of our interactions. And so the way that we cultivate our own souls is a really important piece of the hospitality that we extend to our families.
Okay. So what are
I'm hesitant to say really practical things, because I think it can, I don't want to put anyone in a box, because I think it can look really different for everybody. But do you have a specific thing?
I don't know. I think, but I love practical just because it gives people ideas that maybe they didn't know about. You know what I mean? So not to say this is the right way to do it, but.
Okay. Oh, no. Like, just here are some things that we do is what you mean.
Yeah. I think we all know if we are Christians, we're going to read the word. We're going to, you know, spend time in prayer. But just hearing somebody, like, what does that look like for them can, you know, give ideas and be helpful.
Yeah. So one of the things that we typically do is have like a morning quiet time together as a family, or we'll read a psalm together, and we'll try and do that when our kids are eating, because their hands are busy and their ears are open.
Good.
And my husband is still home. Mm-hmm. And I used to think that, I mean, there have been seasons where that is the first quiet time I have during the day. It's just being able to open the word with my kids, because I'm just rushing around or nursing a baby or something is going on. And so finding those anchors of quiet throughout the day are a really big deal. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've done forever too, and this is also because I'm homeschooling and I just need a time like to know that things are coming to a bit of a soft stop through the day to have a healthy rhythm. We used to give everybody like a quiet time after lunch and have it be like this very established thing so that we could all have a break, especially after everyone's done napping. And so it feels like your life is over because no one ever stops being right up in your face. Yeah. So that was always kind of hard. But then we've also done, instead of just like a snack time, because everybody's kids need a snack, like even if they're in high school, around 3 o'clock, everyone's hungry.
Yeah.
And so we started having, when my kids were very little, and I totally stole this from Sally Clarkson, this idea of a tea time. And so I always wanted poetry to be a really big part of our homeschool days. And I could never figure out, oh my gosh, how can I fit in poetry when nobody will even do their spelling or their math without tears?
Oh, all never the crying.
Happen. They're falling apart. Oh my gosh, the tears over here today over 2-digit quotients with a remainder of long division today for my little guy. And it was just grueling. Poor guy. Is that even something 9-year-olds should do? Is what I was thinking in my head. Should he even do this? I don't know. Maybe we can just go back to subtraction. Yeah, it was really bad. I mean, there's those moments where you're just like, Lord, just get us through this. Let's have a cookie. I just bribe him with M&M's or whatever we have to do. M&M's. As soon as you get to this part, we're going to have an M&M together and I'll have one too. So,
I know. My goodness. Ours recently, my daughter comes up with the craziest reasons why she can't do her homework.
She's the same as my youngest. I know. I think they would be 2 peas in a pod, actually.
My goodness. Well, so my favorite one. Well, you know, she has the normal, like, oh, my mosquito bites are itching so bad that I can't, you know, so sorry, but I'm unable to do homework at this time. But my favorite was extreme nose pain.
Oh,
and I was
no.
like, well, sweetie, that's cartilage. Like, there's no nerves.
You're like, mommy's a nurse. She has a better excuse. Yeah, it's really funny. Oh, yeah, the stuff. My kids are sick every day. Like,
bless them.
I know, really. And then usually, like, their fingers all of a sudden, they all have, like, early onset carpal tunnel. Like, there's so many things.
I know.
Yeah, it's rough being them. But no, I just could never figure out how to do all the delightful things that I wanted to do. And so I found, again, this is just my big thing for moms that want to intentionally do beautiful things with their kids, feed them, do the things that are really important that you really want to do that maybe feel more heady to your kids while they have food, because then they sit there and they listen to you. So Bible time, doxology, you know, teaching them creeds and the Westminster Shorter Catechism, all that stuff, have food there. And especially for your boys, and especially as they get older, because that is just their love language. So then for tea time, we do like poetry during tea time. Like, and it can just be like two or three poems or whoever our poet is that I want to focus on, or we'll pull out like, pull out the iPad or the computer and look at art from a particular artist and talk about it. And we feel very refined and sophisticated because we're having tea.
So this is your 3 o'clock snack?
Yeah. And I just make it like a normal snack, but then I serve tea. And sometimes it's iced tea and sometimes it's just hot tea. Most of the time it's hot tea. And sometimes it's just saltine crackers or whatever it is that we're going to eat, or fresh fruit, or, you know, whatever you would serve. But if you serve tea along with it, like, your kids just feel like you're taking time to care for them. Like, I think that's the difference between that whole heart issue. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's all of a sudden this intentionality between, okay, I want to build into your life today, into our own struggle, into our own puzzle, in a way that touches your heart and touches your soul. And it's a really simple thing. Like, I literally just have to put the kettle on and then pull out the teacups. Except for my son, he has a man mug because he wants to be manly. Hey. So that's his thing. And his is from the Natural History Museum. It's dinosaurs that when it gets really hot, you can only see their skeletons. So he thinks that's so cool. And then
perfection.
It is. It's such a boy thing.
And I love that because you already have it. You already have the tea. You already have the water.
You already have tea. It's water. And sometimes that's all it is. And then other times, you know, we'll make fun things, or we just serve whatever we would have for a snack, but we have it with tea and everyone sits around and has a refreshing 20 minutes. And sometimes we just chat, but most of the time we'll read poetry or I'll read aloud from a book that we're reading, you know, like that we have going as a read aloud or whatever it might be. But just that one little teeny piece has given them something beautiful instead of just something that's mundane and normal. Like, you're gonna give your kids a snack. So if you can just go one little step to show them that it's something special, to show them that you want to cultivate beauty into your day and you want to pause and do something special for them, they really respond quite differently. I mean, sometimes they're just gonna still be falling apart but I find that doing something like that, even in the middle of hard division problems, for instance, just going, do you want to just stop and have a cup of tea and then come back to this, can just be what our family needs to be able to know that they're loved and they're cared for. So there's ways to just see your life as being a piece of art, and the art that you create in your relationships or in your communication or the way that you go about other mundane things.
I love that. It's just a really good way to look at time you're already going to spend.
Right.
The other day, my kids and I are always around, you know, to each other. They go to school 2 days a week, but they're home all the time and I teach them the rest of the time. And so I feel like we're always together.
Right.
But I think I'm usually doing something while we're together and they're doing their own thing and I'm doing my own thing. We may be in the same room, you know, but I'm washing dishes while they're, I don't know.
Right.
Making a mess, whatever.
You can, right? You're just trying to multitask and get it done.
Right. Well, the other day though, I thought, you know, I'm just going to sit down and they're coloring, and so I'm just going to sit down with them. And we just talked, and I really try not to be on my phone around them because I know fast forward, you know, several years, and they're always going to be on their phone. So I'm just trying to model this early on. And so I try not to do that. And and I didn't have paper and I didn't have a book. And I just sat there and they colored and I just talked to them. I knew that I had made the intentional choice to not be doing anything, but then they just talked and it didn't seem like they noticed. And then when I got up and left, you know, 10, 15 minutes later, my son stopped and he goes, wait, why were you just chatting with us? And I thought, first of all, it made me feel terrible. Like, oh my gosh, like you noticed that I, like, this is so out of the ordinary that I would sit down and talk to you. But also it helped me realize, like, it does make a difference. And they do realize when you're there fully and when you're there distracted.
They really do. And I think that's really the case. Like, I mean, phones could probably be a whole other topic, right? But right. But there is something about that turning towards them instead of just going about all the things you have to do. Like, you have to feed them a snack. You have to do laundry. I mean, hopefully you're doing laundry or not every day, you know, like I have a giant pile right behind me right now, but there's things that we have to do. So what are some ways that we can do that are artful, that are intentional, so that our family is able to, like, that are relational even, and our family knows that they're being loved and cared for. Like, one of my daughters loves the smell of lavender.
Okay.
Tide. Like, it's her favorite smell. And it's just so easy to be able to go, oh, we get this smell, because then when it's on her bed, she feels like that fresh, oh, mom, I love this. It's just exactly the way I love my laundry and my pillows and home for her. Like, there's just so many simple things. And I think often, like, I mean, if I were to come to your house, I'm guessing that you would put your phone down and we would sit and we would talk and we would look at each other.
Right.
And so, I mean, maybe not. We know each other really well. Maybe we'd be like tweeting. But there's so many times that I'll catch myself realizing the way that I would offer hospitality to a stranger or to someone I don't even know very well in my home might look very different than the way that I can typically go about the mundane things of my day with my children.
Right.
And I want them to know that they're preferred and cared for and offered my first fruits of hospitality.
That's
and
so
not,
good.
Not the dregs.
Yes. So I tend to be so practical in a way that kind of dismissive of anything feelings or like artistic about the situation. We don't have time for that. We need to, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying that I tend to be more practical. And my husband, okay, so we have our dishes, like the kids' plastic stuff is from IKEA. So everything's
ours too.
Okay, great. So it's all the bright colors and whatever. And and I do this. Okay, I don't want the kids to start feeling like everything has to match. Well, I did not know that my husband, because they'll always say, I want the pink plate, I need the green cup. And I'm like, Lord have mercy. I don't have, you know, we're just trying to get some food in you so we can go to school or whatever. And so I did not know that when I wasn't making breakfast, my husband, because he knows it's a big deal to them, makes everything match. And then he's got all green,
like
green
the
pork.
Pink plate.
Yes.
Pink. Okay.
Pork, the pink, everything.
Just a nightmare.
Well, but like you're saying with the lavender tide, what does it cost him?
Right.
Nothing. You know what I mean? But I'm over here going, oh my gosh, you're making my life so much harder. And yet if I realize, really, is it really that much harder? And my husband will stop me sometimes and go, would it kill you to give her a pink plate?
Yeah.
I think, no, it wouldn't. You know, so those little kindnesses.
Right.
I don't know why I think they're going to take 35 minutes out of my day. They won't. But it's a way to show hospitality and, you know, just kindness to my kids.
Yeah. And it's such a small, simple thing.
Yeah.
But it's just that change in our heart in the way that we, I mean, God forbid the pink plate is ever dirty with like spaghetti on it from the night before.
But, and there wouldn't be fits, you know, I think my fear is I'm going to create kids who can't eat off a plate color they don't want.
Right.
But that's not true, you know.
Right. And so it's a really interesting thing that I think when we start looking at the way that we invite people in, then including our children and our husbands, then we start looking at the place that we're inviting them to in our hearts or our homes or our conversation, whatever it might be. And then, you know, the way that we design what that looks like to benefit them be really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. Tell me about your podcast with Sally Clarkson, who I always call Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, that's funny. She'll think that's hilarious.
Wow. I just don't know enough about, like, isn't Kelly Clarkson, I think she's a singer. I'm so out of the loop.
She's like the first winner of American Idol.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know how many years ago that was, but I'm just
kidding. I don't either. Program. That's the only one I ever watched.
Okay. Well,
I know. Don't tell anybody that I, well, I guess I just told all your listeners. American Idol. I think I would get way too wrapped up in that those shows, so I have to kind of stand back. Yes. But yeah, Sally and I are good friends, and we work in ministry together with her Mom Heart ministry that she and her husband have had going on for over 20 years. They've had Mom Heart conferences, and this is the last year of the Mom Heart conferences. What? Which, yes, what? So buy a ticket.
Well, I can't I'll find be it.
In, I'm to... speaking in Dallas, well, so know. I'll send you a link.
Please, okay.
But yeah, I'll be speaking this year in California and Dallas, and I would love to see anybody that wants to come. We'll be announcing different things that'll be happening with the Mom Heart ministries going from here. It's not completely disappearing, but okay. The conferences will be changing, and that is really exciting. But they've had this beautiful ministry to moms and families for a very long time, and it impacted my life so much as a new mom trying to kind of find my way. Mm-hmm. And then Sally and I became really good friends and have worked together for about 5 years. And we really found, like, through, she was doing all of these webcasts for a long time. And I don't know if you've ever done one of those, mm-hmm. but they're quite amazing. Just getting to talk, like, where, you know, she'll do something that's through video and web. And we realized how much of a huge response women were having to these webcasts, because it's like inviting her into your home for an hour or 45 mm-hmm. minutes or however long they are to be able to speak to you kind of in present time. And it's different than hearing, you know, a conference recording. When you hear a podcast, you get to be a part of a conversation with someone. It's relevant, timely information often that you feel like you can carry with you throughout your home while you're folding laundry or whatever. And we thought, there are so many women who aren't sitting down to read a blog post, but they're able to listen as they go about their day or in small mm-hmm. chunks to something like a podcast. And we both love to talk, and we talk a lot on the phone, and we were like, we could just make a podcast of our phone calls. Why don't we just do this and talk about all these things that we're so passionate about for moms? And So we started doing that, and we've had just the most fun time, and it's had a great response. And
what's it called so people can search for it?
It's actually listed on iTunes under At Home with Sally.
Okay. I'm going to subscribe to that right now.
Or if you look on, I need to get my own iTunes page up, but I just haven't. So it's At Home with Sally, and you can subscribe there. And our show is called The Kristen and Sally Show.
Okay.
My name only comes first because I don't have alliteration with show.
Oh, we were, I see.
And that's so funny. You know, Kristen and Sally Show. And so we have that going up about once a week, a new episode. I think there's four okay. up right now. They're really fun. It's great. Just, we love talking together. We love sharing our heart and being able to encourage moms, like much like you do here.
That's great. Well, I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
What is something that you can't stop talking about right now? It could be anything.
Oh, gosh, that's so embarrassing, because I have to be honest. And the answer is that... So I have two daughters who shave their legs now, you know, that's a whole thing. Yes. And I've been a girl who shaves her legs forever. And I mean, I'm just so sick of it. I'm just so tired of it. And so they're
talking about it, or are you showing them, or what's
it, of doing it?
You don't shave their legs.
No, okay. My own. No, like. No, my gosh. No.
So what are you sick of?
So I'm sick of shaving my legs.
Oh, I'm shaving
so
your legs.
I'm tired of being a girl. And my girls are like, we really have to do this the rest of our lives. What have
so
you
they're
got?
Not into it either.
They do it, but we all hate it, you know, and yet we all want to have smooth legs. So we have been investigating and talking to everyone we know about all these different types of ways to go about handling and maybe preventing ever having to shave again. So if there's anybody out there who is a laser surgeon who wants to donate their services for a blog review,
that is so funny. Shameless plug. No. She has six legs that have too many hair.
Right. And armpits.
Oh my goodness.
Six armpits. So no, we're just at that funny place. It's so embarrassing, but that is the thing that we're talking about a lot. I'm like, let's look at this way. What about this? And friends are sending emails with funny, like, options for this thing called, like, an epilady that apparently hurts, but you only have to do it every 6 weeks. It takes your hair out.
Yes. So, I've heard of that, but it sounds terrible.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I have friends who've done the laser hair removal and...
like $1,000 for a leg or something. So, yeah, I don't think insurance covers that.
No, I don't think so.
But that's, like, what I'll do when I, like, have 5 minutes. Like, what are the other things that would be safe to be able to... and not painful or moderately painful? I don't really care at this point, but that's so funny. That's what I can't stop thinking about.
And I never expected that as the answer. I love that.
Isn't that such an embarrassing answer?
It's a good one. It's very memorable, Kristen, for sure.
To having to meet random people, like emailing me.
Well, the good thing is we're coming on winter.
Right. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I don't know that it really changes it up for me.
Now, you know, I don't shave my legs in the winter. I've just let everyone
know. That's okay. People don't. And, you know, we could all move to Europe and this would just be so normal. It's never
regular.
Ever. Yeah.
I know.
We're in the wrong continent, apparently.
Well, when I first got to shave my legs, I was so into it. So they're just starting and they're still not into it?
Well, I mean, it's just like the maintenance. Yeah. Like, we're all just like...
overwhelmed by the hair.
Yeah, we're just trying to figure out how to handle ourselves.
Yeah, that would... I'm not looking forward to puberty.
Well, and all the nicks, and then, you know, like, we're getting out, like, lidocaine spray, because then, you know, there's, like, bumpies or whatever.
What is that for?
Like, you know, when you have, like, razor burn, or figuring out how to make it simple, and I don't know, like, being a mom of teenagers is weird. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, anything to make puberty easier is what we're dealing with around here.
All right. My goodness.
I'm never telling my girls that I was on your podcast.
Don't ever.
So
ever.
Certified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll swear ourselves to secrecy. If we see your daughters, mom is the worst. Thank you for talking to us today about all the very wide variety of things that you shared.
Yes. Laser hair.
Yes. Well, I hope you find a solution to that very pressing problem.
Me too. I'll let you know. I'll keep you updated.
Please do.
Anyway, thanks so much for having me.
So fun to talk to you. And I can't wait to check out your podcast. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Okay.
All right. You have a good rest of your day.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Isn't Kristen great? Since recording this, I have listened to every one of her podcast episodes, and each time I try to pick out one bit of wisdom to hold on to and think about, but I always end up with like 8. And you know what I love about her show? Again, we're so different. There's no editing, there's no music. It's like you're listening to a conversation with two wise women, because that is exactly what it is. When they say hi, it starts. When they say bye, it stops. And whatever happens in between is what happens in between. At one point, I think Sally answered her phone in the middle of recording. Like, it's just so free. And people who have that amount of freedom are real puzzlers to me. I wish that I was like that. And I'm glad to know that it's a possibility and something to work towards. The content of that podcast is so good and really worth listening to. I would encourage you to check out Sally Clarkson. Go ahead and just search for that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and she'll pop up. So what I want to implement based on all the wonderful things that Kristen said this week is the idea of doing something lovely during snack time. I usually use that time to do some chores or whatever while the kids are sitting and eating, but I'm gonna go ahead and sit down with them. And our family, we really like to draw. I mean, my husband's good at it, but the rest of us are not that good at it. But so I would like to use snack time to do some art and maybe just look at like a famous picture and try to copy it. So that is my plan for this week. And I hope to do it just a couple snack times this week, is to have some art time. So what about you? I hope that you got a lot out of this. I know that I did. My pages of notes were long. So if you want to, I would love to hear how you're going to struggle well this week. Find me at Mom Struggling Well on Facebook and Instagram, and Mom Struggle Well on Twitter. Hang in there, ladies. Being a mom is challenging, but we can totally do this. Have a great week of struggling well.